The RNLI, Royal National Lifeboat Institution, is 200 years old this year. We all know the story of how Sir William Hillary's noble idea to create a life-saving charity came into inception when he observed the shipwrecks around the Isle of Man. We have the Tower of Refuge as testament. But it was on this day, 4th of March 1824, when that idea came into being at an inaugural public meeting in the City of London Tavern, Bishopsgate. Since then, the RNLI has gone on to save more than 144,000 lives at sea, 1,600 of those in Manx waters. To mark this bicentenary year, we at Manx Radio wanted to get a feel for what it's like for the volunteers in this day and age, in machines a far cry from the oar-powered lifeboats of the past. On Thursday evening, the extra day we got last month in honour of the leap year, I headed down to Port Erin Lifeboat Station for what would be one of the most memorable evenings of my life. I'm Lewis Foster, welcome to this edition of Island Life on Exercise with Port Erin RNLI. I arrived at the station for 4 o'clock. I was told this would give me time to meet the crew and get kitted up. I was heading out on the inshore lifeboat to experience and learn about what happens when the station is issued a call-out. When I walked through the door, there she was, the Muriel and Leslie B-class lifeboat, the Atlantic 85, a RIB, or rigid inflatable lifeboat. It's one of the fastest in the RNLI fleet. I first met Lifeboat Operations Manager Lewis Barrett, who we'll hear from shortly, as he showed me around the boat and the station. Introductions over, it was time to get kitted up. A thick blue woolly thermal bodysuit goes on first, then I had to squeeze into the iconic yellow suit, literally. A rubberized neck hole and cuffs. Once in, you squat down and squeeze out all the pockets of air still inside, leaving you, as crew member Ian Wilkinson told me, literally vacuum sealed. With the lifeboat being lowered off the carriage, the crew and I were briefed on what to expect.
It's going to be a west southwesterly force 405 and low waters at 20.08. Any problems, we'll return to station. We're SAR capable, and if there's any problems or anything, if we get a shout where we have to return, we'll come back, we'll take those off, and then we'll go back on them. Anyone got any injuries, or they're not feeling well, or you're good?
Biggest one for Lewis is holding on. Use your knees well, but don't hold on to the handrail with your thumb round. Put your thumb over the top.
Okay.
All right, because you might come back with a sore thumb.
We climbed aboard, and I was told to sit in the radar seat next to Ian. We had crew member Liam Farrer behind us, and Tony Mitchell was the helm on our journey.
So I'll oversee or command everybody today. We've got Will. And we've got Liam. Will is doing navigation at the moment, so he'll plot a route into where we're going. Liam is on number 4 seat, so he'll do lookouts and keep an eye on the engines and any rope work that's required. What we're going to do is we're going to launch from the carriage, go out towards the end of the entrance of the harbour. We're going to do man overboard exercise with you. So if the boat capsizes, we'll go through that procedure. From there, then we're going to proceed through Carver Sound, through the area, through towards Chicken's Rock. And then we'll proceed back into the bay. So at the moment you're on number 3 seat, so you've got the radar. In that seat you can also do the radio. If needs be, you could also do navigation if you want to on that seat.
This boat as well, how does it compare to the other boats we've got on the island?
This one, we're very biased here, so we always say this is the best boat out of all the fleet, but she's a very capable vessel. She goes through the weather nicely. It's good fun.
Now it was time to go, and as we came away from the carriage, Ian told me to expect some spray. What an understatement that turned out to be.
So again, just as we leave the carriage, let that rope just slide out your hand. Don't let your hand go with it.
And once you let go, just get your hand.
Yeah, like I say, don't have your thumb under, your thumb just in case we hit any hard waves.
Sure. Not
possibility of breaking your thumb.
Okay.
And you've got the toe straps.
Yeah.
As we pulled out of Port Erin Bay, the waves were choppy, but the boat just powered through, bouncing us over and over and over and over. I felt this would be possibly the turning point. I had an hour of this to come. If I was going to be sick, better to suppress it now or get it out before it's too late. Thankfully, my body went with the former.
Belfast Coast Guard.
So
they run most of Ireland and also cover our path, so we do all our comms through them.
Thank you, that's just because of range, basically, is it?
Yeah, well, we used to be under the Liverpool Coast Guard jurisdiction, but they changed it to Belfast a few years back, so they just coordinate everything in this northern of the Irish Sea.
And the boat was absolutely flying. They told me this type of lifeboat can hold up to 20 casualties. Her top speed, 35 knots, powered by two 115 horsepower four-stroke engines. But the real advantage in a boat like this is said to be its manoeuvrability, ideal for rescues close to the shore, near cliffs and rocks, areas inaccessible to all-weather lifeboats like those at other stations around the island. But don't let the term inshore fool you. This lifeboat, the RNLI says, can handle fairly challenging open sea conditions, as I'd soon find out as we approached the Calf of Man.
Obviously, I've got a nav screen on here, all the electronic charts and the plot routes, where we're going, casualty positions and stuff. That's the radio set, that's the radar, which obviously shows us up the land, you know, mainly used at night. And then this is a radio direction finder, so we can home into onto a casualty if they've got a radio and they're broadcasting that. Little lights come around the side of the dial and it'll point us where their broadcast is coming from. So
right, okay.
It's another bit of kit we use with the search and rescue.
We did a lap of the Calf heading out towards Chicken Rock Lighthouse. Tony at the helm, perfectly controlling the throttle as we rowed up and crashed down on wave after wave. Well, back at the station, lifeboat operations manager Lewis Barrett was overseeing proceedings. At 26, the crew wondered whether he must be one of the youngest lifeboat operations managers in the charity.
When did you first get involved with the RNLI? Was it at this station?
Yeah, it was at this station. It was probably around about 20 years ago. My great-nana used to run the shop, and her friend was the mechanic on this station for around about 55 years. So I'd been coming down with them ever since then, and about 7 years ago I joined formally as crew, and then about 6 months ago I took up the role as the lifeboat operations manager.
So you've got some real heritage in the family as well. They must be quite proud of seeing what you've achieved with the station so far.
Yeah, I think so. There's been a lot of work recently to get us to where we are, but it's just been good to see us evolve and the RNLI evolve over the 200 years, I think. Obviously, I've only seen the last 20 of them from what I can remember.
So we've heard a bit about what it takes to be a volunteer and all that intensive training that you go through. To become a lifeboat operations manager, how intensive is that? What does it take to get that step up?
It's a different role entirely, really. When I was crew, I did what the others do. I went out on the boat and I trained, whereas now I've got operational responsibility for the sending the crew out into the conditions that they do go out on, and that lands with me. But someone has to do it, and I'm more than happy to work with the RNLI for that.
It's quite a responsibility, and you can see like the trust that the crew has in you here. Is it quite a tight bond between the different members here?
Yeah, it's very tight in this station, and it's something we've had to work on over a number of years to really form that bond with each other. So that we know that when we go out on that boat, we can trust the people we're there and I can trust the people on the boat to do the job that they're supposed to do.
Over the last few years then, what are some memorable moments that stand out to you? I mean, just going out on the boat itself on little operations like we've just done, memorable enough as it is, but any standout moments?
Yeah, I've been on a number of different service calls that's probably been reported in the past, but aside from seeing jet skis in the side of a calf to capsize boats or boats on fire, as much as they're not nice to see, it's good to see that we can make a difference. And you don't have to, you know, 150 years ago, if you went out to sea, you knew there was a risk that you were putting your life on the line there, whereas now there's someone there to make sure that doesn't happen, or at least we try to.
And when you're out there on the boat responding to those calls, you mentioned about the bond, it all must click between the crew and obviously the manager back here at the station. And what's it like, how does it feel when you complete a successful mission, as it were?
We do a lot of training, and when something goes well and we complete an operation, it's almost as if all that training has paid off and you've done a good job.
200 years of the RNLI, when you think back over that heritage, those two centuries, how significant does it feel to be a part of it in this day and age?
I don't think many charities last 200 years or many organisations at all, really. So to be a part of one that does, and one that means so much to me and my family and probably a lot of people on this island, it makes you feel proud of what you do. Yeah. And grateful that you've been given the opportunity to do the things that you do, as well as the training that you're also given.
Do you get many people asking you why you do what you do?
Yeah, it's quite common now to get, why do you give up your time? And it's a difficult question to answer, because unless you're part of it, it's difficult to understand that it's just something that you feel you need to do, and therefore you do it.
And I get the impression you wouldn't change it for the world. You're in this for the long haul as well. Do you see yourself having a life with the RNLI?
I'm not sure what my partner will say about this, but yeah, absolutely. It's just about getting the balance right. As long as you can do that, you'll succeed, I think.
And why should anybody else join the RNLI, do you think?
It's just a completely new experience for people, and you see people grow into more mature and more skilled in not just the RNLI way of life, but in every aspect of their life. They can take the skills elsewhere into the workplace, so it's definitely something you should consider if you have the opportunity.
Well, back at sea, we headed back towards the bay. The crew wanted to talk me through one of the most vital bits of training they go through.
So I'll just talk you through a capsize procedure on this boat. If we were to get it really wrong and ended up going in the drink,
right,
Boat's upside down, all likelihood you've probably been thrown out of the boat. If you were left inside the boat, what we do, we make our way up to the front, up to the bow of the boat. There's a sea anchor which we deploy, which is like a big parachute, and that keeps the boat pointing into the weather, so we're not taking more waves side on.
Okay.
And then when all the crews are accounted for, up at the front of the boat or outside the boat, we get out over the sponson. Bear in mind we're upside down. This is all lit up as well if it goes inverted. So anyway, out around the sponson, make your way to the back of the boat, and then on the back of the boat on the A-frame there, that's a big inflatable bag. So when all crews assembled off the stern of the vessel, there's a lever that you pull and it inflates that big bag. And then you all hang out the back of the boat on the end of a rope whilst the boat flips itself back over, and then make your way back onto the boat, reset the systems, and hopefully we're good to go. The engines are inversion proofed, so in a capsize there's valves and stuff that shut off the air supply, and sort themselves out again once the boat is back the right way up, and that's how we do it. We all go down to the lifeboat centre down in Poole in Dorset.
Okay.
And you do a sea survival course and you get capsized in one of these in a big indoor pool with a wave machine and all that. It's really good fun. Every new crew member gets to go down there and take part in that.
Just a glimpse from Ian there at some of the intensive training that the crew have to go through. Someone who's recently gone through all of that is trainee crew member Kim Holland.
So how long have you been involved with the station here?
So I first got involved in around December 22, shortly after I moved to the island. Moved to the island from Sheffield in August, and I wanted to get involved with the community somehow, meet more people. So I saw an advert that the lifeboat wanted new volunteers, so I came down to join.
Ever done anything like this before?
No, I'm from Sheffield, which is positively landlocked. I always had an interest in the sea. I've always volunteered for some kind of cause throughout my life, and I thought, what better way to get involved with the community, try and give something back and meet people in a new home than joining the RNLI.
So what kind of experience, I suppose, have you been through training-wise up until this point?
The training is a lot more intense than I ever anticipated. There is a whole host of assessments that we have to go through to be considered seaworthy. And considering I've been here over a year now, I'm only about halfway through my training and assessments. So we have to learn things from what to do when the boat capsizes, what to do if there's a fire on the boat, how to rescue people. I've done an advanced first aid course. I've learned about tides and weather. I've learned about how to helm the boat, what it means to drive at a certain speed. I've learned about knots and nautical miles, and a lot of terminology as well that I've never heard of that comes from the nautical world as well.
So what does your family back home think of what you do here with the RNLI and on the Isle of Man as well?
Oh, they love it. They're really proud, and especially when things like saving lives at sea are on, and they get really excited about the fact that I am involved in the RNLI. And it's just something that they really resonate with. Like, you can really see the work that the RNLI do, and they for sure feel proud that not only am I involved in the RNLI, but being a woman as well in quite a male-dominated world. It's just a sense of pride around that.
So you were saying, are you the only female then involved in Port Erin Lifeboat Station?
Yeah, I'm currently the only seagoing crew member, and we do have a shore member of staff who's another woman. But we've got a couple of people on the cusp that we're hoping will get involved, but it would be great to have more women at the station. It's important to have a diverse set of crew. And even though I am the only seagoing crew member at the moment that's a woman, it doesn't matter. Like, it's great. I've been really accepted onto the crew, and it is like a little family.
What are you hoping to do with your time here? You see the likes of Emily Heaton, there's other female coxswains around the islands as well. Does that give you kind of inspiration?
Oh yeah, I'd absolutely love to progress to helm. So with us being an ILB, when you get to that stage, the equivalent of coxswain, it's a helm on our ILB. And I'm definitely hoping to go into that trajectory. As I said, I'm only 50% through my like regulatory crew plan at the moment. But I have to pass navigation and quite complex radar skills type assessments before moving on to helm. But yep, certainly I would absolutely love to be a helm one day.
And when you joined, were you aware of the significant anniversary approaching? You know, when you found out, I suppose, that it was 200 years this year, what did that strike a chord with you?
Yeah, I had no idea when I first joined. I didn't know anything about the history of the RNLI. I was aware of it as a charity, but I didn't know the breadth and the depth of everything that goes on, the amount of volunteers in the organisation. And having been involved in a couple of the 200 events, I just feel so proud to be part of it. And it's amazing to see the history and to see the people that have given up so much time and energy in the lifeboat throughout their entire lives. There's people on our station that have been involved for 25 plus years, and I just think it's amazing that people are so passionate about it and want to give that much time to the lifeboat.
And what would you say to anybody else, perhaps women who feel that there isn't a place for them in the RNLI, and what would you say to someone considering joining?
I think you just have to go for it sometimes. Go and see what your local lifeboat station's all about. Get in touch with the press officer or the manager at that station and have a chat and go and meet people and see what it's about. Every potential crew member gets a chance to go on what's called acquaintance trips, and you get three of those trips to go on the boat to make sure it's something that you're into and something that you want to do. But there's also loads of shoreside opportunities as well. So if being on the water isn't for you, there's lots of opportunities to support with getting the boat out on the water, fundraising, shop voluntary work. So there's so many options to get involved with the RNLI.
And we know about kind of the core commandments behind the RNLI, but what does it mean to you, the RNLI as an institution, when you see the work it does around the UK, the British Isles as well?
It's just such a unique organisation in the fact that the vast majority of the people involved are volunteers, and to have a whole emergency service based on a volunteer workforce is incredible, really. And for me, it means providing security and safety to the coastal communities that we live in. And you can tell just when you talk to people in the community that I live in here in Port Erin, people love it when they meet people that are on the lifeboat. And when we're out and about at community events, people are always so thankful and so generous in terms of like giving when we're fundraising. And only on New Year's Day, there's a sea dip down here. Loads of places actually across the island, but in Port Erin, people were coming up to us and thanking us. And I almost felt, I don't deserve this, thanks. Like, I've not done anything yet. But people are so appreciative and they feel safe when they see the presence of the lifeboat and the RNLI.
Well, back on the boat, the grin which had been plastered on my face since we set off was still there. And, you know, as if the experience hadn't given me quite enough bragging rights already, this happened. Moonlight and Starlight, a familiar mother and daughter pair of bottlenose dolphins, started jumping and playing around the boat.
For some reason, these dolphins,
they just like to come and follow you around. So. You don't purposely go and approach them. They like riding the bow wave, so.
There you are.
Some good footage.
As we brought the boat back to calmer waters, I had the chance to speak again with Ian and Tony.
I mean, as we're talking, the dolphins are swimming around, so finding it a tiny bit hard to concentrate. But yeah, I mean, I can see, obviously, you were saying it's like an old Towers ride. You still get a kick out of it every time you take it out.
Yeah. Where else can you do this? £230,000 worth of kit and you go out. I mean, don't get me wrong, the training's deadly serious, but you've got to enjoy it at the same time.
And you're taking on some of those waves when we were around by the calf. I mean, what's that feel like to drive it?
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Love it. I mean, I've been on the lifeboat 9 years now, and every time, still enjoy it. Absolutely brilliant fun. You know, you come down on a Sunday morning when everybody else is still in bed, and you go out in this kind of weather, it just sets you up for the whole week. It's brilliant. Yeah. Great fun.
Talking about the grin on my face, I feel like you're grinning as well.
Oh, yeah, it never stops. Yeah.
It was time to head back to the station, and I was told to leave my seat and sit on the floor of the lifeboat in front of the helm. I must admit, I wasn't as much of a fan of going backwards over the waves now. But sitting there, holding onto one of the many handles that lined the side of the lifeboat, it gave me a better sense of what this boat was truly for. Those black handles, each one, now to me, represented a possible life saved. At that point, I had nothing but absolute respect for the crew on the boat and at the station, who at the drop of a hat head out on callouts, which can no doubt be far trickier than the exercise I'd just experienced. So I want to end the programme by thanking everyone at Port Erin RNLI who gave me the opportunity of a lifetime. Liam Farrer, Ian Wilkinson, Lewis Barrett, Kim Holland, Tony Mitchell and Jason Fleming, as well as RNLI Regional Communications Manager Claire Fitzpatrick Smith. I've been Lewis Foster, Gura Myed, and thank you for listening to this edition of Island Life.